is Tuesday, June 24th, 2003, and we are in work session on House Bill 5052, which is the budget bill for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. Mr. Bender.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Today is the first of 2 days that you have scheduled for this budget. Tomorrow, in addition to this budget bill, you also have a public hearing and work session scheduled for Senate Bill 184, which is associated with this budget and associated with the Aspire program, which is one of the programs that the Oregon Student Assistance Commission operates. But I'd like to, if I may, just start off with by referring you to this buff-colored sheet, which basically outlines the committee's work plan for this bill over the next couple days. And the work plan for this budget is very similar to the work plans that you've had for the other education budgets that you've had work sessions on so far, in that it is the hope that the committee will go through and look at the technical adjustments which need to be made, to look at standard adjustments that the co-chairs are making to all budgets, and to look at other funds and federal, well, other funds limitations. But the final decision on the amount of general fund support and lottery fund support would be postponed until a future work session. So looking at this work plan, we have a number of things to complete and a number of things that we'll talk about here, but you will not be asked to make or vote on at this time. So that's the work plan. I've also distributed a number of materials to you, including a memo with yesterday's date. This is the same memo we distributed to your offices yesterday, so there aren't any changes, but this is the LFO recommendation for this budget. And then there are two additional sheets, including one that's a table that shows the OSAC budget structure and has attached to it an LFO write-up of this agency and what it does. We won't be referring to this write-up, but this is some background material for you to show what's in the governor's budget and what the agency's programs are. If I may, Madam Chair and members, start with a brief review of this agency and how its budget is set up and what it does. It's been a very long time since you've had the public hearing on this particular agency, so I'd like to just spend some time to go over again what it is that the Oregon Student Assistance Commission does and how its budget is put together. And in order to cover that, I would ask you to please look at this table, which is the one that shows the budget structure. And what this table looks shows, each of the columns shows the different fund types that this of types of funds that this agency spends. The rows show the different divisions of how this agency is organized, and that helps to give some background as to what its programs and functions are. But before we go into this in detail, it's important to recall one thing, that the agency operates a number of programs that are separate and distinct from each other, and that the funding does not flow between. So there are some programs that receive funds from one source, other programs that receive funds from another source, and they really can't be commingled because they're separate programs entirely. But if we look at this table here and look at the general fund column, you can see the general fund is going into four of the five program areas of this agency. The first place where general fund is spent is in the administration division. The administration division is the organization or the division in the agency that is the central administration. It is not the case that all administrative expenditures are spent in the administration division, but this includes the executive director, deputy director, and some of their top staff people are here in the administration division. The general fund, instead of looking down in a column, if we just switch and look across in the row of the administration division, you'll see that it receives some general fund of about $227,000 plus about $1.8 million in other funds. The other funds, the general fund component is the part that the state is providing to help administer the general fund programs of the agency. And the other funds in this row are the monies from the other funds programs that are being used to support the administration of the agency. To remind you what the general fund and the other fund programs are, the general fund programs are primarily financial aid programs that the state is financing. The vast majority of the state's general fund, in the governor's budget, it was about $31.9 million of the 34.1 overall, go into the Opportunity Grant Program. The Opportunity Grant Program is the state's primary financial aid program, and it provides grant funds to students of limited incomes who are attending community colleges or four-year institutions in Oregon. There are some other general fund programs, supported programs as well. There is the Rural Health Services Program and the Nursing Services Program. Both of these programs provide assistance to medical practitioners serving in critical shortage areas, which are primarily, or I believe exclusively, certain rural areas of the state. The way both of these programs work is they pay back the student loans that medical practitioners have taken out as part of their medical education in return for the physician or nurse or physician assistant working in and practicing in one of these critical service areas. So those are also general fund supported programs. The last of the general fund supported programs is a new program that was established in the 2001 session, the former Foster Youth Scholarship Program, which provides basically full-cost scholarships to college students who were in the foster care system as kids. So this was a new program set up to provide additional support to students in that situation. All of those four programs that I spoke about, the money that's spent, the general fund that's spent in those, is in the general fund column under the Grants and Scholarships Division. That $33.2 million includes all of the funds that are distributed to students through those various programs that we just talked about, plus it also includes some administrative expenses, salaries and services and supplies that the agency spends in order to administer those programs.
If Mr. Bennett, could I just clarify then?
Sure.
Within the Grants and Scholarships Division, there is an administrative function. The administrative division that's above that doesn't do the administration on the Grants and Scholarships Division?
There's additional administration in the Grants and Scholarship Division, in the Loan Division, in the Information Services Division, and in the Office of Degree Authorization.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. What percentage of that Grants and Scholarships Division funding is cost for additional administration?
The amount that is for administration in the grants and scholarship is just take me 1 second to get you that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The general fund portion, that would be
Madam Chair, if I might respond to that, it's $404,000 general funds.
I had $456,000.
So is it 456?
Those would be the amounts of funds that are not going out in special payments.
Okay.
So that would be the services and supplies.
Mm. And administration.
Oh, wait a second. No, I'm probably looking at the wrong column here. I apologize.
I don't know if the blue binder is right, but it has 404 on page 87.
That's probably right. Let me just... Yes, I'm sorry. It is $404,312.
And is that administration, not SNS, or just administration?
Both of those together. So those are the funds that are not going out. Those are the dollars that are not being distributed directly to recipients. That's how we're categorizing administration.
And none of that is salaries?
No, that part, a portion of that is salaries, yes.
Of the 400?
Mostly salaries and some service and supplies.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Senator, did you have a follow-up?
No, I'm just looking for the proportional.
Okay. Let's continue, Mr. Gander.
The administrative cost, will you?
There's also general fund in the Information Services Division. This particular agency is organized to have a separate division for its information services or IT functions. Most agencies don't organize themselves this way, but you can see as well that there is an additional $257,000 of general fund that goes into the Information Services Division in the governor's budget. These are all of these funds are administration, not in the sense that these are all of these employees have administrative responsibilities over other employees, but in the sense that these are not funds that are being distributed in the form of student aid. They're being used to operate the agency. And finally, the Office of Degree Authorization and Policy Research, it would be similar to the Information Services Division in the sense that all of these general fund dollars are being used to support the costs of the agency in this area. So in the governor's budget, there is a total of $34.1 million in general fund. The lottery fund dollars in this budget, as well as the federal fund dollars in the column after that, are a lot easier to follow where they're going, because in both cases, all of the dollars that you see there in terms of lottery funds and federal funds are in the Grants and Scholarship Commission, and all of the dollars are distributed to students in the form of opportunity grants. None of these dollars are used for administrative support or for any other program except for opportunity grants. So
Mr.
these are
Bender?
Two fund sources that supplement.
Representative
the other funds I see here, private scholarships amount to $19 million. Rural health program and opportunity grants are about $750,000. What are the source of other funds?
Talk to us about where you are in that blue binder.
Oh, page 88, page 87.
Just after the grants and scholarship tab.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just wondering what the source of other funds in some of this is.
Sure.
I understand private scholarships because you say in your narrative there's about 250 sources of private scholarships. I'm just kind of curious.
The other funds in the grants and scholarship program comes from two major sources. One of them are the private scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
Private scholarship or the private award program, I use those two terms interchangeably,
mm-hmm.
is a program where the agency serves as the administrator of grants that mm-hmm. private individuals are setting up, or scholarships that private individuals are setting up. So that provides a great deal of those funds. And if you look back at the table that I provided here on grants and scholarships, basically the non-limited other funds are essentially those monies that are being distributed from these private scholarship programs to students. You do not limit the amount of private donations that the agency can transfer to students. So however many people want to participate in this program, you allow the agency to distribute their scholarship funds to students. The other funds, where it's not, where it is limited, of $3,430,000, those represent the administrative costs of the private scholarship program. So those are the costs that the agency is allowed to incur and spend in order to help administer these private grants. Those you do limit because you limit the number of employees the agency can hire, you limit the amount they can pay the employees, so there's a limitation on the administrative expenses, but not on the actual transfer of funds.
Representative Smith, you have a follow-up?
Mm-hmm. I'm still not satisfied where the other funds come from.
Okay. So they're coming from, where they're coming from is in the private award program, donors contract with the commission to operate their scholarships, and the contracts allow the commission to retain a certain portion of the funds to spend to operate that program.
For instance, the nursing program or the rural health program. What about the Jobs Plus program?
Okay. The nursing program and the rural health program are all general fund supported.
Different pot of money.
Okay, but it's under other funds.
So the other funds don't relate to the general funded programs. The other funds relate to the non-limited other funds
from private scholarships.
Right. Am I correct?
Sorry, I was looking at this. Could you repeat that, please? I'm sorry.
The other funds are derived from the non-limited other funds.
Yes, they are derived from that. And they are also derived from a second program, the Aspire program. So there are basically two programs there. There are the private awards and the Aspire program. The Aspire program is not a student financial aid program. No one's giving money to students in the Aspire program. But it is a program that is designed to provide information to students in high schools about their options for post-secondary education and for financial aid. The Aspire program is entirely grant and donation funded, and we'll be talking more about that tomorrow because Senate Bill 184, which you'll be asked to look at, deals with that particular program. But the Aspire program basically provides services that in many cases guidance counselors may have provided or may still provide, but many schools have been cutting back on their staff.
Is that from non-limited private funds?
Limited.
Is all the Aspire program money in other funds limited?
Yes.
Okay, so there's no Aspire money in non-limited.
No, the only non-limited funds in this agency, since we're having, let me just talk about what's non-limited. The non-limited amounts are in grants and scholarships, the $20.9 million. These are the dollars that are going to students from the private awards.
Okay.
In the loan division, the amount that's non-limited, the $33 million, are expenses that the Scholarship Commission is paying as a result of its loan guarantee program that are not administrative in nature, but are involved with actually guaranteeing the loans and providing payment to financial institutions who have made a loan and the student has defaulted on that loan. So that's how the loan guarantee program works. If you're a private bank and you make a student loan to student A and they end up defaulting, it's a guarantee. So the state pays that loan off and then the Student Assistance Commission goes out and tries to collect funds. You do not limit how much they spend to pay off the loans, because if you told them, well, you can only guarantee $10 million, then it wouldn't really be a true guarantee.
Right. I understand. Now, the Jobs Plus program, is that?
Okay. The Jobs Plus program, I believe that is in other funds.
It's other funds, but what's the source of other funds?
Those funds were funds that employers who hired employees participating in the Jobs Plus program were required to deposit funds at the employment department. And when a person who was a participant in the Jobs Plus program indicates a desire to pursue a college education. The Employment Department will transfer those funds, or an amount of those funds, to the Scholarship Commission, which in turn will then transfer them to help the student pay college costs. I think that if you need more details, there are people here in the agency who can.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mazzarri.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve, could you refresh my memory on the defaults on the loan guarantees? What percentage of those, do we have any information on what percentage of those loans do default? And is this an area that we need to pay more attention to?
I believe that some of the material that I've distributed to you in the memo, at the back of the memo, I've attached some information on the agency's performance measures. And I think some of those performance measures talk about the rate of default. If you look at this particular memo, on the second to the last page, you'll see a table that says performance measure data summary. And if you look at the third from the bottom, talks about, I'm sorry, I thought this was a different number. I thought this was the number that went into default. This appears to be the number of loans that do not go into default. So my reading of that is that slightly under about 7% of those loans are defaulting currently in the year 2001, because 93% of the are not going into default.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the if I'm interpreting that incorrectly, could someone please clarify that?
Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record.
Just take a seat there and bring your coffee with you and papers.
Order some bagels.
For the record, my name is Jeff Sweetser. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and our default rate is about 5%.
Do you have a follow-up, Senator?
No. Okay.
Madam
Chair. Senator Gordon.
Thank you. I had a question about the Jobs Plus program. The reason for that account, if you will, sounds like a good reason. How's that program been accessed? Are students benefiting from it? And if there's information or a page that gives that detail in the materials we have in front of us, please point me to it.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, I can give you a high-level view of the Jobs Plus program. If we get into any level of detail, I would ask our grants administrator to come up. But the way that the program is designed is that employers pay into a fund one.
Excuse me, I understand the design. I want to know if it's being accessed, if it's actually being used by students.
Yes, it is, but to the extent that it was originally intended, probably not. And we have had a discussion at the last legislative session about doing some additional work and reaching out and contacting folks to educate them about their benefit and get them to use it.
So is it the case then that there are funds sitting there that have been sitting there for some period of time unused?
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, I believe that is an accurate statement.
In the amount of over $1 million?
I don't know the dollar amount. There's been some discussion about that fund and whether those monies are being used. Right now, in order for an individual to access that, they have to contact, they have to affirm, they have to say, I want to use that money, instead of it just directly flowing to us and allowing us to work one-on-one with the individual. So right now the money is not at OSAC, and we do not control that relationship and that interaction. And I'm not really sure what the fund amount is.
So where are those funds if they're not at?
I believe they are at DHS.
And they're at DHS drawing interest in some account?
That's a good question.
Help me here.
I don't understand why they did DHS.
I'd like some more detail on exactly what's happening with the funds and a lot more detail on how it's been publicized and access rates and exactly who has been benefiting since the program was created.
I believe we can get that information. I'm not sure I could get it to you by tomorrow, but we will do everything within our power to do that.
Representative Smith.
I'd like to know where at DH it is and why. I kind of don't understand that part. But then I don't understand a lot of stuff.
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, that was the way it was designed. It was a partnership between Department of Human Resources and our Department of DHR, and the Employment Division, with the idea of getting folks off of public assistance and moving them into the job markets and creating opportunities for them to improve their skills and also provide incentives for employers to work with disadvantaged folks. That's my understanding of the Jobs Plus program.
If I might just follow up, Senator Gordley, do you have more questions?
No.
Can you talk to us about what the parameters are around how long the money is available to the people that it's earmarked for, and what happens to the money if within that time frame no one signifies that they're interested in using it?
Madam Chair, I would ask to invite our grants director up to the table, and because we're getting into a level of detail that I do not know your answers. I don't know your answers to your question.
I'd be very happy to have that person come forward. Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kathleen Hines, and I'm the director of the Grants and Scholarships Division. The money does originate in the Department of Human Services, the Employment Division. AFS was also a participant. I believe their participation has all but disappeared in this program. Once a participant has worked for an employer for 6 months, the employer has made these deposits into, it's called an individual education account for that participant. We did work with DHS last year and the Employment Division, AFS, to do a concerted publicity and outreach effort to boost participation in the program, and we saw a significant increase in participation as a result of that. Excuse me. We also broadened the items that the money might be used for, including books and supplies, and that raised participation significantly too. And we also, it is available to immediate family members as well. So if someone has participated in the program and they want their child to be able to use it at community college or for some training, they can do that as well. I will add that it is available for, it has to be job-related education or training. So a number of participants use it, for example, they'll have worked in an insurance office, so they'll use it to take an insurance certification class or get their real estate license or something like that. Many of them participate in limited licensing and certifying programs rather than putting it towards a college education. The average individual education account is about $800, so it's not a significant amount, but it can help. The amount of money, so once a participant responds that they have completed their employment and that they do want to participate, their funds are transferred from DHS to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. We then get in touch with the participant and say, as soon as you're ready to use these, let us know. We send them their vouchers telling them, you know, with the money on it, the dollar amount on it, to encourage them to use it. And then if they enroll in a program, they send the voucher back to us, and we send those funds to the school. We never send the funds directly to the participant. It goes to the school, to the bookstore, to, you know, whatever program they're participating in. I believe it's about, they have about 3 years to use it once it hits our door. If they don't use it, then those funds revert to the opportunity grant.
Okay. And so we heard testimony that there was about $1 million sitting in there that hadn't been mm-hmm. used at any point? What I'm trying to do is get a bead on what happened when you did your outreach and you changed the rules on how the money could apply. How greater was the response to using the money?
I don't have an exact percent on that increase, and the $1 million you're hearing about is money that has not reached OSAC's doorstep. It's money from participants who have not responded to DHS saying, yes, I've completed, yes, I realize I have these funds. I would be hazarding a guess if I said I know that for us we had a lot more participants. You know, at the level of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, I would say it was at least a 10% increase, maybe more, in usage. What the increase was from DHS's perspective, of people at least even originally signing up, I'm not sure, but we could probably get that information for you, maybe even by tomorrow.
So do you receive then a kind of a rolling appropriation, an annual appropriation from the fund for the money that's reached that three-year stage and isn't eligible to be collected from anymore?
Well, the funds are transferred to us as soon as the participant says they want to participate in the program.
No, I'm talking about the funds that no one claims that reach the three-year shelf life, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, there's a small bit of other funds that goes into the opportunity grant that it's about $256,000, $270,000. Some of that money is expired in Jobs Plus individual education accounts. It is other funds when it reaches us, and then it just, once it expires, once it moves into, it just shifts into, in our fund, within our internal funding system, into the opportunity grant. And it's reflected in that other fund amount.
And the amount of that is around $200,000 a year, did I hear you say? A biennium?
It's not quite that.
The total other funds that flows into the Oregon Opportunity Grant is $256,000. That is the lion's share of that other funds. But, Madam Chair, is your question what about the money before it gets to us?
No, I'm just curious about what happens to the money that's in that fund that it runs out of time to sit in the fund and no one claims it and wants to use it.
There's really two funds. One is at DHS, Employment Division, and the other is once an individual says, I want to use that money, they then forward that money to us. That's that's when the three-year clock starts for us. I'm not sure about the clock that's on the money that has not been affirmatively asked for.
And then once the clock runs on the funds at the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, that 3 years, it then transferred into the Oregon Opportunity Grant.
So what I hear you say then is for the money that resides in the Employment Department in DHS, you don't know how long it sits there before it's released.
Correct.
Let's check into that, Mr. Bender, and find out what happens to the unclaimed money and what the time is on how long it sits there before they decide that it isn't able to be held anymore.
I'll have that for you tomorrow.
Thank you. Senator Gordley, did you have a question?
Yes. The $256,000, I'm confused now. The $256,000 is the same amount that shows in Information Services Division as general fund. You're not talking about that?
No.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, no. Yes.
A coincidental number there. If no one has any further questions in this area, we'll ask Mr. Bender to proceed.
Well, where I wanted to wrap up was with the other funds programs, and we're talking about a number of these other funds programs, but note that this agency has both limited other funds and non-limited other funds.
Okay.
And the non-limited other funds are either monies that are going out to students or monies that are involved with purchasing and collecting on loans that the agency's involved with in the guarantee program. The limited other funds basically represent administrative costs, as well as, well, these are basically just administrative costs in the Aspire program. Some of those funds are transferred out, but they aren't in the form of student aid. Some of the main other fund program of this institution is the loan guarantee program. And all of those, none of those funds are fungible or transferable into the opportunity grant program. But that is the main source of funding for this agency, and that is where most of the agency's employees are involved in working in that particular program. Some of the other programs that are other funds supported do include the programs of the Office of Degree Authorization. The Office of Degree Authorization receives some other funds in the terms of fees that it collects from colleges and institutions that wish to offer programs in Oregon and are applying for authority to do that. A lot of the other funds in the Office of Degree Authorization and Policy Research number that you see there, the $600,000, again, are coming from funds that the agency is allowed to retain from the student loan program and also from private awards, because the policy research is also working on issues relating to that. So the costs of the agency itself are split. The state provides general fund support to support the administration of the scholarship programs that we are funding, and the federal government and private donors provide support to provide for the administration of their programs.
So, Mr. Bender, just for personal clarification, in the Office of Degree Authorization and Policy Research, in the limited other funds category, the source of that $604,000 are fees that colleges and universities pay when they're going to offer new programs?
That would be part of those sources, but only a small portion, actually, of that total in that number would be from that source. Most of these funds would be other funds that the agency is receiving from the Federal Loan Guarantee Program and private awards. This particular row, Office of Degree Authorization / Policy Research, is more than just the Office of Degree Authorization itself. It is also the policy review unit of the agency. And that is why there are, you know, significant numbers of funds coming in from the loan guarantee program in there as well. Even though ODA isn't involved with the loan guarantee program, that particular division is, because it's broader than just the office itself.
Okay, so I'm still confused here. If the function is policy research and the money comes from the loan program, what are they doing policy research on?
Well, I believe that they're doing policy research on ways of default, you know, avoiding default and of operating the program. Perhaps the agency would like to comment on that.
If we could, yes.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, that Policy and Research Division is responsible for, we prepared a report on the budget on the Oregon Opportunity Grant, extensively involved in that. That person also tracks legislation, is responsible for keeping us abreast of what's happening on legislatively, and then also some statistical analysis for the various programs that we administer.
Thank you.
I also have with me Alan Contreras, who is the Office of Degree Authorization and Policy Research Administrator. If you have additional questions that you would like to pose to him.
I've got the explanation that I need. I'm fine with it.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Bender, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If there are no more questions about this, I'd like to start getting into the LFO recommendation, which is the memo dated June 23rd. and to cover some of our recommendations for you relating to this budget.
Committee members, Senator Gordley and I have been called into a meeting at 10 this morning, too, so I will be adjourning this meeting at that time. Please proceed.
The first two recommendations involve revenue adjustments in this budget, and the fact that expenditures are not going to be, it's not possible to have expenditures at the level in the governor's balanced budget at the levels that were in there because the revenues are not going to be in there to support them. In order to show this before actually going through the memo, I would ask you to please look at the last page here that I distributed today, which is a table labeled Changes in Opportunity Grant Funding, and looks at the funding for the Opportunity Grant and how it has changed since the governor's balanced budget proposal. The governor's balanced budget, as you see, included $31.9 million in general fund, $3.7 million in lottery funds, and $1.4 million in federal funds. The first two recommendations of LFO today deal with the fact that there are not $3.7 million in lottery funds available now or $1.4 million in federal funds available. And the reason for this change is the following. The reason is that funding was reduced to the Scholarship Commission during the what we call the sixth special session. Those were your meetings during this regular session to rebalance the 2001-03 budget that you took after the March forecast came out and you found out that the state was in deficit. One of the actions that you took then to rebalance the budget was to transfer $112 million out of the Education Stability Fund to the state school fund to help rebalance the state's budget. The lottery funds that this agency receives are not your typical lottery funds. Rather, they are earnings from the Education Stability Fund that are dedicated to the Opportunity Grant by statute. And when the principal was removed from that fund, basically the $112 million took out essentially all that was in there, that reduces the earnings that are available in 2003-05. And that reduced after sixth special session. As you can see, we expected the lottery fund dollars to drop by about $2.48 million so that there would only be $1.2 million left. And again, that was because of the withdrawal of principal. At the same time, when that occurred, the state lost the federal funds that it had in the governor's budget of $1.4 million. That's to say we expected none of those funds to be available anymore. And the reason why is the federal programs require a maintenance of effort of state support for the Opportunity Grant. The feds require that we do not reduce our state support below certain levels or they're not going to provide the money anymore. You've seen this in many types of cases where there are federal funds. And with that $2.48 million decline, that was enough to make it so that we were no longer meeting the maintenance of effort requirements and there would no longer be federal funds available. So the after sixth special session shows what the adjustments were after that special session. And that is what, we can go through the rest of this later, I believe, but that is what these first two recommendations involve. It's chewing up the budget so we know how much is now available. The first recommendation involves lottery funds. Our recommendation is that you reduce the lottery funds expenditure limit in the grants and scholarship program by $3,015,825. The reason, if you do that, the amount that will be left in the lottery funds expenditure limitation will be $710,977. That is less than the $1.2 million that we expected after sixth special session, But what happened was, after the sixth special session, then the May forecast came out, and the earnings projection for the Education Stability Fund was dropped further because of the decline. They forecast lower interest rates than before, and that means that they're forecasting less in earnings from that fund. They are now only projecting, the Office of Economic Analysis now projects that there will only be $710,977 in lottery funds in 03-05. So that is why our recommendation one is there, to make that reduction and to set the lottery funds expenditure limitation to $710,977. Before you consider this, I would like to add that this is an expenditure limitation. All of these funds are dedicated by law to the opportunity grant. So if it does turn out that the forecast in May turns out to be too low, and say 6 months from now or 9 months from now, we now expect there to be, again, more than the $700,000, the emergency board would have the option under its authority to increase the expenditure limitation. That's something they can do. It doesn't have to be in session. So this isn't an irrevocable decision, but we believe that it is important that the budgets be true and you take this reduction to show the amount of lottery funds we project at the current time.
Discussion on the LFO recommendation? Senator Gordon.
How do we put ourselves back in position to get the federal funds contribution?
Mr. Bender.
In order to get federal funds contribution, you will need to increase general fund support over the level in the governor's budget. And you need to do that. We knew that you would need to do that even before this new forecast came in showing less lottery dollars than before. But because there are fewer lottery dollars, you need an even bigger increase in general fund support than we had thought. If you go back to this table, you could see that the co-chair's budget, which is the first, the second yellow line, the co-chair's budget, they do have sufficient general fund. They kick it up to $39,354,000. That if you are able to approve that level, you can see that the federal funds number is up to $1,239,000, and that's the maximum we expect the state to be available. You don't have to put in the full $39 million to get that 1.2, but this does show that at that particular level, if that ends up being the amount that you do pass out, all of the federal funds available would be restored.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Bender, just for, again, personal clarification, the $39 million that's in the co-chair's current budget, putting more money in than that wouldn't get us any more matching federal funds.
That is correct.
And what is the lowest amount that we can put in and still get those federal funds?
Let me see if I brought that with me. I should have. To get the full amount of federal funds, I think that this number is about over $4 million above.
The $39 million is $4 million above?
Yeah, so you need a little over $35 million to get the full $1.2 million that's available.
So just ballpark numbers, the $39 million is about $4 million more than we actually need to put in if we were going to capture the maximum amount of federal funding.
Correct.
Okay. Senator Gordy, did that answer your question?
It answers the question, and it also makes the point that we need to maintain our maintenance of effort and claim those federal dollars. And I see us all making a note of this. So,
I do very much recall that when we heard when we were in public hearing on the agency, that one of the things that the committee was very interested in was restoring the funding level so that we could capture the federal dollars back again. And I'm happy that the co-chairs have continued to hang with us on that one. Is there any more discussion on the revenue adjustment to lottery funds that LFO is making? The chair would accept a motion that the committee accept the recommendation from LFO on the lottery funds revenue adjustment.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley's made the motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Without objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
Recommendation 2 is a similar recommendation relating to the federal funds. As we've mentioned, we do not anticipate any federal funds at all under the governor's balanced budget proposal at this time. So we are recommending that you essentially reduce that federal funds expenditure limitation by $1,424,468. That's the full amount that's in there now to show this. Then, when and if you are able to add funds back, we will show at that time the federal funds that are coming back in as a result of that addition.
So then we would add the 1.239 back
right.
in.
And you, okay. So the decision, that decision when you make that general fund decision, the federal fund decision will fall through at the same time because they are so connected.
Questions for Mr. Bender on the LFO recommendation relating to federal funds?
I would just put the emphasis on when we restore.
I would be willing to put a highlighter over that.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I'll give you a courtesy yes on this, but with the understanding that we expect these funds to come back in. We really
do. Absolutely.
I think that we all share that expectation.
I'm sorry to be gone so much, but we have a problem with DHS budget, too, surprisingly not. It's just absolutely important we put these back in, not lose these federal funds. And that's probably been your discussion already this morning.
It has been, and that we've been stepping through the co-chair's budget scenario that does restore the maximum amount of federal fund that we're eligible for. And Mr. Bender's actually told us that at the $39.3 million that's currently in the co-chair's budget for general fund, that's actually about $4 million more than we need to put in to capture the maximum federal fund.
I understand that, Madam Chair. I understood that was the agreement we had coming in, and I appreciate you honoring that agreement.
Well, and I appreciate the co-chairs hanging with us on this one, too.
Thank you.
The chair would accept a motion for the committee to accept the LFO recommendation on revenue adjustment as it relates to the federal funds.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection? Without objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
Recommendation 3 is our standard recommendation that we have in all budgets to make an adjustment for the reduction in the DAS assessments. These reductions are $1-for-$1 reduction in what we expect the assessments to be, so they don't affect the money available otherwise to the agency. As you can see, we expect the DAS assessment, to be reduced by $51,493 as a result of the budget for DAS that you approved. We expect the reductions to be distributed as shown in the table under Recommendation 3. So we ask that you reduce the general fund appropriations and the other fund expenditure limitations as detailed in that table to eliminate unneeded funding for the payment of DAS assessments.
Questions for Mr. Bender on the adjustments to the DAS assessments? The chair would take a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on service charge adjustments, DAS assessments.
So moved.
Senator Gordley's made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion. Without objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
Recommendation 4 shows the reduction in costs to the agency as a result of a 10.1% reduction in the Attorney General hourly rate that was approved with the Department of Justice budget. We project that will reduce costs to this agency by $13,986, distributed by fund type and division as shown in the table under number 4, and we recommend that you reduce the general fund appropriations and the other fund expenditure limitations as detailed in that table to eliminate those unneeded funds.
Questions for Mr. Bender? Chair would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on state government service charge adjustments in attorney general charges.
So moved.
Senator Gordy's made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion. Without objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
Recommendation 5 deals with is another recommendation that is in all budgets to remove funding in budgets designed to offset the impact of inflation. The co-chair's budget includes no funding for inflationary increases. The table that you see under Recommendation 5 shows what is in the budget currently in the governor's balanced budget to help finance inflation by fund type and by program area. And we recommend that you reduce the general fund appropriations and other fund expenditure limitations as detailed in this table to remove the expenditure increases that are in the budget for inflation. I do want to note to you that that big number that you see in general fund under grants, I mean, most of that are dollars for the Opportunity Grant Program. These are dollars that were added in the agency's budget for inflationary increase, but the co-chair's budget does require that inflation funding be removed from all agencies in order to balance.
Questions for Mr. on the offset for inflation? Chair would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on the elimination of funding to offset inflation.
So moved.
Representative Smith's made the motion. Is there a discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion. Without objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
Item 6. The co-chair's budget does not include any funding for salary, wage, or benefit increases during the 2003-05 biennium. The governor's budget, it turns out, did not have funding for this in it either. So we are not recommending any dollar adjustment, but we did want to let you know that we looked at this issue. We didn't forget about it. And we recommend that the subcommittee does note that the adopted budget does not support any increases in salary, wages, or benefits for OSAC employees during the 2003-05 biennium, and that you expect no such increases to be awarded.
Discussion? Okay. Chair would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on compensation increases.
So moved.
Senator Gordley's made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
Vacancy savings adjustments. The co-chairs have directed you to look at all vacant positions that are in the agency and to determine if any of these are not needed and should not be or should be eliminated and not funded in the upcoming biennium. LFO looked at this and does have a recommendation to you. We note that there are 14 vacant positions that are listed in this agency, and we are there are also 8 vacant positions beyond that that are not existing currently, but that are in packages. That in other words, the governor is supporting adding new positions, and they're considered vacant at this point. I always think it's better to look at these new positions when we get to those policy package options. So I put those recommendations in numbers 10, 11, and 12. But with regard to the 14 existing positions, I will first tell you what our recommendation is and then explain it. We're recommending that you do eliminate 8 of these 14 positions, that the other 6, that the agency be permitted to continue to hold them and to fill them, but that for one of these 6, you reduce funding because this is a position where the person who is leaving is at the top step, and we're recommending that you fund it continuing at the second step. If you look at the table on page 4, this table lists by position number the 8 positions that we are recommending be eliminated, plus the last position there, the 9th one, 2100-000, There is no FTE reduction. We're not recommending that that be eliminated, but we're recommending a $39,392,000 reduction in funding for that position when it's refinanced at the second step.
Mm-hmm.
We've discussed this extensively with the agency, and we believe that they are will concur that this is manageable to them to eliminate these positions. I do want to let you note that after page 5 in this packet, I do have a list of the 14 positions plus the 8 new positions that are being added. And the ones that are shaded are the ones that are being eliminated. The ones that are not shaded are the ones that we are recommending that you allow to be filled. And I'd be happy to talk about any of these positions in more detail.
Questions, Madam Chair?
Senator Gordon.
Yes. I'm hearing you say that the agency is able to manage with these changes, but what will be the impact of on the delivery of services with the loss of some positions?
Madam Chair, Senator Gourley, members of the committee, we have we put this budget together a year ago, year and a half ago. We have taken a look at how best to use our resources. We have gone through the special sessions like you. Our general fund's been reduced. So we have just looked at ways to do more with less staff. And so we have had a full discussion with LFO regarding these reductions, and we do not believe they'll impact our services. One of the concerns is really not with our direct customers, but it may be in the ability to gather information and respond back to Steve, our BAM analyst. And it puts us on the margin, but I don't believe it will impact our core customers or students.
Follow up, Senator?
That's an adequate response. Thank you.
Okay.
Further questions? Representative Bates.
Just real quickly, sort of a big picture question. How many extra positions are there? Is it the 97 I see in the governor's balanced budget? How many actual positions the agency have when you get through with adds and cuts? If you're adding some positions and cutting some positions, you're adding 8 and cutting 4. And then how many actual FTEs do you have at that point? Actual bodies, people working.
If you approve these reductions here, plus some recommendations in number 10 to allow the agency to have 5 new positions, the net effect would be that they would have 87 positions under that budget.
Which is essentially 10 less than they used to have.
10, which is 11 less than they had in the governor's balanced budget proposal.
But bear in mind, the governor's balanced budget added positions that didn't previously exist.
They had 90 positions that were approved, 92 positions that were approved in the 2001 session.
Yeah. 0103 was finished with 92.
Right, and now they would be at 87.
And how many actual bodies do you have working in the 0102? And how many people are actually working in the agency in 0103, at the end of 03, when we adopted the budget compared to now, before all the special sessions?
You want vacant positions counted as not a position?
I want to know how many people. I want to get a picture of what's happened to the agency, and it's really hard to get that.
Okay.
At the end of the last session, we had a certain number of people working in the agency. Then we went through all the budget cutting, and now we're talking about where they're going to be the next buy-in. I just want to know what the actual number of people working in the commission is.
Do you have that information?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, members of the committee, at the beginning of the biennium, it was 92. We have left some positions vacant because of the. I don't know the answer. I will get it for you.
I just want kind of a picture.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to put people's spot.
Sure.
I want to get
understood.
A feel of what's going on here.
So understood. What you're after, Representative Bates, are not just the number of positions, but the number of positions that actually had people in
them or are expected to be filled. I mean, your maximum number of positions is going to be 87 then.
Madam Chair, Representative Mace, that is correct.
So then I need to know, or I'd like to know, how many of those positions you actually have filled.
Right now.
Okay.
Correct.
Or it's, and
or
I expect to be filling them in the next 6 months or so, I expect.
Yeah. Madam Chair and Representative, I can respond to that. It will be 87.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Do you have any more questions?
No.
Any further questions on the LFO recommendation concerning vacancy savings? Chair would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on vacancy savings adjustment. So moved. Representative Smith made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion. Without objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
Thank you. Recommendation 8 is an LFO recommendation to change the amount of general fund support for the nursing services program. The nursing services program is one of the general fund supported programs that we talked about earlier that provides pays off student loans for nurses who are serving in critical shortage areas. The governor's recommended budget has approximately $370,000 in general fund for that program. We are recommending a reduction of $200,000 from that amount. So we are recommending more, that's more than a 50% reduction, but we are recommending this with the understanding that this will have no impact on the size of the program. This was extra money that was in there that was not needed to continue the program at the level that the agency is administering it. What the agency has done is they've gone through only one round of awards so far, and they made 8 awards in 1 year to 8 nurses. The plan is to annually make 8 awards each year. And at that funding level, there is $200,000 more in general fund than they need in order to make those awards. We are recommending that you fund the program at its existing level. A very reasonable and obvious question is, why is there $200,000 more than is needed? The reason was that originally the agency had been setting aside money that you appropriated in order to pay off this program in the future. When someone gets an award under this program, they're eligible to receive money over a 5-year period. So if you're a nurse and you're working in a critical shortage area, you have an amount of loans that are calculated to be what you're eligible to get paid off. So you may have, for example, $20,000 in loans that you will get paid back. But you only get one quarter of that amount in each of 4 years. So you apply, the scholarship commission says you're eligible for $20,000, we give you this award. Then the way it works is if you stay at that job in that critical shortage area for 1 year, you get your first $5,000. And if you stay there for your second year, you get your second $5,000. So you have to stay there for 5 years in order to get, or for 4 years from the date that you applied, in order to get your full $20,000. And the scholarship commission had been setting aside money to make sure that in each biennium there would be enough money set aside to pay the commitments for those nurses until they expire. We're recommending that you just put the money in now that they'll actually need to spend for 03-05. If you do that, you can reduce the amount by $200,000 with the understanding that there are commitments out there and that the state will require general fund for this program in the 05-07 biennium and the 07-09 biennium, even if no additional awards are made after the 03-05 biennium is over.
Question. Senator Gordon.
Yes. If we have such a critical shortage in nursing, why are we only making 8 awards? I don't understand that.
Yeah, me too.
Why aren't we making 16 or 30? I don't get it.
Madam Chair, Senator Gorley, and members of the committee, based upon the amount that we had received in the past and a continuation of that, that is the amount that we could support with the amount that was in our budget, assuming that we were going to have enough to cover the obligation, the total obligation at the time that we made the commitment to the individual. If I might back up just a little bit, the other program that relates to the medical profession is the Rural Health Services. In that program, we have a Rural Health Services Fund. So when we receive the appropriation, it goes, we move that money into the Rural Health Services Fund, make a commitment to an individual, and there is a 100% assurance that there is money in there to cover that obligation over that multi-biennial approach. We attempted to do that last session, and we changed the language. We were supposed to have it in a general fund separate account. It doesn't work. So now this is just a straight appropriation that's going to cross multiple biennia. We could. I guess the answer is if you obligate a dollar today for this biennium, it's really $2.50 total, because if we make two payments in the biennium, it's two of four or five payments. So it's really, you can do that, but you just need to understand that there's a doubling of the impact. A dollar in our budget today is going to cost you potentially $2 in future biennium. Because if you gave us $200,000 or $500,000 and we made awards that covered this biennium, we would need that sum of money next biennium just to cover those awards that we made this biennium. And if you wanted to serve additional folks, you'd have to give us some sum of money over and above that. So it has been our approach to use the money that you give us to make sure that we're not over-obligating the state. I don't want to come in and commit $369,000 and come in next biennium and say we did good things and now we need $758,000. And I don't, So our approach has been to cover the obligation, total obligation, with the amount that you appropriate.
It still doesn't make sense to me. I'm looking at $200,000 that could be used to support scholarships for nurses, mm-hmm. a critical shortage area, but we're not going to, I'm just missing something.
Madam Chair, Senator Gourley, and members of the committee, Steve prepared this sheet that gives a breakdown of how the funds flow, and I think that if you don't have that, if we could get this to you, I think it shows that a dollar committed today crosses biennial boundaries, and there are future obligations that are being contracts that are being made that you need to be aware of. So we would be willing to make more awards in the nursing services program, but there is a fiscal impact in future biennia that you need to know at the time that you make that decision.
Mr. Bender.
I'll be happy to bring some more information for the committee tomorrow so that you can have that before you consider this recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bates.
Yes, Madam Chair. I think what you're trying to tell us, and I think the issue here is really twofold. One is this is a new program. As you ramp up a new program for the first 5 years, the amount you're putting into it is going to have to increase each year until you reach some kind of steady state with people dropping off one end as new people come in the front end. That's one of the problems. Right?
That's correct.
That's what you're trying to explain to us. This program has been in place for 5 years already. Then the question would be, if we want to expand it, what will it cost to expand it knowing we have a five-year commitment to anyone coming into the program in the beginning, as long as they stay in a designated area, which you've decided, I assume, by administrative rule. So that's, I think, one problem. That's what you're trying to get to here. What we're being told is, we'll give you enough to run the program as it stands right now, but understand the next biennium, the bill will be higher because you will probably have brought new people on board, plus you have the ones that are running through the program on a five-year basis. The bigger question is a policy question. Is awarding 8 nursing scholarships worthwhile? Mm-hmm. That's the real question. Mm-hmm. I mean, facing the incredible shortage of nurses we have, what's the best way to approach that problem? Is it expanding nursing population? Is letting the market forces take care of that once that population is expanded? Is it getting more teachers into their schools so we can teach and produce more nurses? Is it fixing conditions at workplace that not as many leave? There's all kinds of questions involved here, and this is a very small piece of it. I'm kind of stunned because I remember this legislation going through, and probably we didn't look at the devil in the details, which said the amount of money you're putting into this is going to be enough for about 7 or 8 nurses, which is just a pittance. And I think that's the real question we're facing here today, is this is a woefully underfunded program. But considering the situation the state's in right now, I'm not sure we can do much better than that. And I would vote to keep a pilot program at least open and running for right now. And if the revenue increases in the future by any means, we can expand the program at that time. And that would be my position, and I'm not sure how the other committee members feel.
The committee members, we need to adjourn at 10 o'clock today because a couple of us have other commitments. But let's take up this discussion when we reconvene in the morning. And Mr. Bender, if I'm not mistaken, we'll just continue to work our way down our brown list and then take a look at Senate Bill 184 that relates to the Aspire program. And having no further business before the committee today, this meeting's adjourned and we'll reconvene at 8:30 in the morning. Thank you.